This is Advanced D&D, a podcast on WUKY, hosted by DeBron Thomas and Dan Wu. This is episode 30, believe it or not, and we have so much to talk about. Plenty going on in the news. We'll also talk about the continued rise of Lil Nas X, and catch up on plenty of shows we watch and talk about food as we always do. That's coming up right here on Advanced D&D on WUKY. I feel like I get to say this every week, and I sound like a broken record, but the news never seems to, like, not be ridiculous. So I pass it off to you.
And I'll tell you, the immigration sort of crisis or dilemma in this country kind of never abates, no matter who's in the White House. Most recently, we've had an influx of undocumented immigrants coming over the southern border from Haiti, which means they have had a long, long journey. And honestly, at this point, I would like to call them refugees because they essentially are, they're climate refugees, they're political refugees. I mean, this is a country that's had an earthquake and an assassination within weeks of each other. But a very, very ugly, unfortunate photo or series of photos came out recently of either customs or border agents on horseback with cowboy hats on trying to grab these Haitian immigrants, you know, crossing a river or running down, you know, a hill or something. And just the image of a white guy on horseback grabbing a, you know, destitute looking black man or black woman on foot. Let's just say that's not good optics. I think the Justice Department and the powers that be have come down to criticize and investigate it, but I don't even have any words for that.
You know, I did not have that as my on my racism bingo card. I would have thought that at the very least would have been the one thing that didn't come back. But it is still here. And I, you know, when I saw those pictures, I just immediately broke into tears because I was thinking about all of the people who literally went through that and died and survived and died and lived for us to be able to potentially never have to deal with that again. And the fact that we're even talking about this happening in 2021, I don't care if they were from Haiti or from Mexico or from, you know, any country in Europe. It doesn't matter. Nobody deserves to be treated that way. And there is a reason that we technically stopped or at least adapted the way that that happens in the United States. It's absolutely disgusting and it breaks my heart. And I mean, you know, we're going to hear lots of people say, oh, this was terrible. But like, if y'all really cared, that wouldn't have happened in the first place.
Yeah. History doesn't always repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes. And sometimes history feels like a Rakim jam because it rhymes so, so well. Speaking of immigrants and refugees, the Biden administration is raising the cap on refugee admissions to 125,000 for the coming year, for the coming 12 months. And that will about cover a lot of, or I think all of the Afghan refugees that we have flown out of Afghanistan after, you know, the 20 years that we spent there. And it does relate to us locally as well. Kentucky Refugee Ministries has told us that they are prepared, as in they have the resources to receive up to 125 Afghan refugees, along with the other refugees from other countries that they normally take in. So I'm very interested to see how this plays out. Local organizations like KRM don't really have a say as to how many people they get, when they get them, how they get them. The federal government makes these sort of determinations and then they just show up one day. And it's up to the community and private sort of organizations to help them get acclimated, get settled. And one of the biggest issues we're having right now is housing. They've been settling a lot of Afghan refugees in Pasadena, California, which has a large Afghan population, but housing is so scarce that they are going from the airport to homeless shelters, which is atrocious. I'm very interested to see how Lexington will relate and be a part of the refugee influx in the coming months and years.
Lexington's a really welcoming place, and, you know, there is a vibrant refugee population from all over the world. And, you know, I would love to see more people be welcomed into our community. But it is also really sad when you hear of situations like what's going on in Montana, where people are talking about not wanting to take 75 people in a state that is that large. So, you know what? I hope that the 75 people that were planning to go there come here and, get to learn and love this city and why, Lexington's a really cool place to be.
Yeah, one of my favorite posters or T-shirts that I've seen in recent years is "We'll trade racists for refugees." And we'll do two for one. We'll do three for one. Whatever kind of deal you want to make, I'll trade you, as many racists as you want for as many refugees, because they will genuinely make our community better and more interesting. Another week, another award show. The Emmys were this past Sunday. There were apparently lots of nominees in the acting categories that were people of color, but guess how many won an acting award in the Emmys?
None.
None is correct. Hashtag Oscars so white, hashtag Emmy so white. I mean, were they just waiting their turn? Is this their year for their hashtag? Despite also, and this is a really interesting thing, and I think it happens in lots of different places, they had plenty of Black presenters. In fact, their host was Cedric the Entertainer. So, you talk about performativeness, like literal performativeness. Talk about bringing Black folks and bringing quote-unquote diversity onto the stage to make your show look diverse, and then ultimately those performances, that art is not rewarded. We see it time and time again, and I guess it's just the Emmys' turn for their reckoning.
And kind of thinking about Michael K. Williams, it makes me feel similar to the way that the Academy did Chadwick Boseman. Michael K. Williams just passed away, and it would have been a wonderful thing to have, given him an award for, not just for Lovecraft Country, but just, because of the great, roles and characters that he has given us as fans. It is always ends up being performative. And to quote one of my favorite football players and, of course, a hometown hero of the Bay Area, Marshawn Lynch, "I'm all about that action, boss." So you can sit there and put up as many presenters as you want, but don't tell me that you care about it until, we actually start getting a diverse swath of winners.
That's right. Shang-Chi is still busting up box office numbers here in the States. I think it's been number one 3 weeks in a row. Shang-Chi is a story about, the first Asian American superhero. The story is very Chinese, very rooted in some Chinese mythology, some history. A good chunk of the movie is in Mandarin. And guess where it's not being shown right now? Is mainland China. It's a bunch of different factors at play. Right now, China-US relations are not great. They're always a little bit rocky, but right now they're not great, very contentious. There are a lot of critics in the state in China who are talking about the kind of the usual talking points of Western corrupt values, blah, blah, blah. Some people have also pulled up the original Shang-Chi comics as a way to say Shang-Chi is racist and we don't want that in our country. But anyone who's seen the movie has seen the amount of creativity and work and sort of authenticity that's gone into it to counter its racist origins from the 70s. So it's very, very interesting to me. And Disney very much made a conscious play for that market. I mean, if any movie was supposed to do well in China, it should have been this one. So I'm kind of curious to see if and when it will play in China, because, you know, Disney is losing a whole ton of money in this situation. But it also brings up sort of a larger picture. If you've been a, you know, had a keen eye when you're watching movies, especially watching credits in the beginning, you'll have seen a lot of American blockbusters being co-productions with Chinese production companies. You'll see random movies that just will have one scene in China, or characters that are Chinese here and there. The Chinese market is so big that no major production, no major blockbuster wants to be without it. So it's very interesting. It's almost like product placement in reverse, trying to capture that market. It's fascinating to me.
I've always felt really odd about the, you know, the way that, like, a lot of, you know, it's like these movies come out and the plan is like, oh yeah, we're going to get them out in America, but we really want it like that. We're going to go to China and that's where we make our money. And then we'll make all kinds of changes just so that they don't lose their bottom dollar. So there's part of me that's like, I mean, it is a pandemic still. So, like, I don't know. Like, you were bound to lose money at some point during all of this. Well, one thing here in the States that I was kind of shocked to hear about is Amanda Gorman announced on the Jimmy Fallon, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, that in 2036, she is going to run for president of the United States. And it has been a plan that her and her parents have you know, have talked about and planned for many years. And by 2036, she will be old enough to run for president, which is 35, if you're not a Constitution buff. But one of the other things I learned is that Amanda Gorman has a twin sister named Gabrielle. So I'm just saying, like, we already got like I can't wait for the biopic about that.
Yeah. So my thoughts on this, first off, we have raised the ceiling on how early you can announce a candidacy, which for better or for worse, you know, people are always talking about how presidential, you know, campaigns seem to start right after the last one ends. You know, it's like a perpetual 4-year cycle. But I think Amanda Gorman's really kind of taken that game to a whole new level. I mean, 15 years in advance announcing, we may see some other teenagers and 20-something starting to announce for, you know, the future. We may have people having babies and announcing for their children for 36 years, you know, later. Secondly, the fact that, and I believe Amanda Gorman's twin is an identical twin. We've seen the movie Dave, right? You know, back in the 90s with Kevin Kline, with this sort of the imposter president. We've had that sort of as a theme in movies. There's a great Akira Kurosawa movie called Kajimusha that is about sort of somebody impersonating an emperor. So, you know, I'm not saying hijinks will ensue, but the potential is there.
And bringing it to, you know, to some nerd, situation, it has proven to work with people who just kind of similarly look like each other, like Keira Knightley and Natalie Portman. The first time I saw Phantom Menace, I was like, you mean to tell me that they're not the same person?
Yeah. And here's the other, like, bad part of it. The whole, you know, you can get into the whole racial trope of, like, not being able to tell people not of your race apart. So, yeah, so maybe she doesn't even need a twin sister. Maybe just, you know, any black girl her age will do, sadly.
Well, there's a lot of power in that as well. Well, moving into music, one of my favorite recent musicians finally announced his brought out his debut album, and man, it is fire. But I will pass it off to you for this first part.
It's funny because I will admit I don't really listen to a lot of Lil Nas X's music, but I literally love everything else he does. in terms of his public persona, his hijinks, his just brilliant trolling of haters. And most recently, he has put up a bunch of billboards advertising his new album, Montero, that look like cheesy, like ambulance-chasing lawyer ads. He has one that says, "Are you single, lonely, and miserable? You may be entitled to financial compensation." And there's a picture of Lil Nas X dressed as a lawyer. Another one says, "Do you hate Lil Nas X? You may be entitled to financial compensation." And my favorite one is, "Do you miss the real America?" And it doesn't have his picture on it. It's just like a flag. And then it says, "Go to welcometomontero.com. Now that one is going to upset some people, which is why I love it.
I also think that, you know, there is a really, you know, it's a really great thing that we are in real time getting to watch him grow as an artist. You know, I will say that the album itself from start to finish, it is a real piece of work. Like it's incredible just the way that the transitions between songs and the way that, you know, the messages of things flow. Like for me, this is not an album that you listen to on shuffle. You know, you kind of have to listen to it start to finish. And, you know, the last song is a song with Miley Cyrus. And, you know, first time I listened to it, it really just had me almost in tears. Like, but it's really wonderful to have watched him go from like a meme rapper to now like one of the more celebrated artists of recent memory. And, you know, good for him, because he's also giving a platform to a whole lot of people that never felt seen or heard before. So it is a wonderful thing. A couple of other musical notes that I will make. Well, one is that Anthony Hamilton released a new single called "Love Is the New Black," and we are going to get a new Anthony Hamilton album at some point, which means, you know, more potential children, I guess, because that's the kind of music that he makes. But it's all good. Now let's move into my one of my favorite sections, This Week in Anderson .Paak. And Mr. Brandon has had a fantastic week, being featured on not just The Daily Show as a one-man band that he quickly lost because he was Trevor Noah was not a fan of his non-comedic timing. There's a great 5-minute video out there. It's hilarious. But he was also on Sesame Street and got to hang out with Cookie Monster and Oscar the Grouch and played all kinds of music. And on his social media pages was talking about how much that meant to him. So, you know, I'm so happy. Another person I'm just so happy for. Well, moving into TV and movies, what you got for us this week, Dan?
This is something that I've been waiting for about, 10 years? Oh, it might be 20. Honestly, there was a series called Why the Last Man on Image Comics, written by Brian K. Vaughan, who's been one of my favorite comic writers, and Pia Guerrera was the artist. It's a real simple premise. It's one day, every creature on the planet with a Y chromosome just dies. Animals, birds, insects, people. Except for one dude and one capuchin monkey. And the brilliance of that premise is that the rest of it is played out fairly realistically, just thinking in terms of like, what would happen to government? Who would become the president in the line of succession? How few airline pilots there would be now, that people would be traveling by train instead. Who is the most powerful military in the world now? It's Israel, because they've had women in combat, you know, for decades. Just brilliant. It was an 8 or 10 part book, and I've been kind of passively waiting for it to become a series. Finally, it has gotten picked up and produced by FX, which has been putting out some really, really quality stuff. Honestly, I feel like FX is kind of the little brother to HBO in terms of that sort of serious quality television. So the series has come out. I've watched the first 4 episodes, and I will say it has not disappointed. They have done a great job updating it for today, because when it was written, they did not address transgender, the idea of transgender men or women at all. And they addressed it very much head on here, which was great and an intricate sort of integral part of the story. I will say one thing. I love when a series or a story has a character that you just hate, but you realize, oh, he has to be this way. He can't be likable. And in this case, it's the main character of Yorick, who is a slacker 27-year-old white kid who is so self-involved and entitled that his actions are putting other people in danger, and he just doesn't see it. And I hate him, and I love it for the story because it makes the story much more complicated and difficult. So highly recommend Why the Last Man. It is streaming on FX on Hulu, dropping, I believe, every Monday.
Well, speaking of shows that drop every Monday, Reservation Dogs came to a, was it the season finale?
Season finale.
So we got to see the eventual kind of conclusion of the story arc of are they going to go to California? We did not address the episode 7 last time because I had not seen it. So just a very quick trigger warning. There was there was a suicide in episode 7. We learn of the fate of their friend Daniel. Because it had been teased along that, you know, that he was no longer there, but was never really explained how it happened. And the fact that Aloria was the one who found him really kind of explains why she's so adamant about going to California. And I really, really love this show because it so well just weaves between, you know, serious and just like falling out your chair laughing. And does it in a really appropriate way. I cannot wait for this, for the next season. Taika Waititi is a genius. Everyone else that works on the show is a genius. Like it's just so beautifully made.
It very much is. The combination of sort of realism, heart, humor, darkness, lightness, is so great. And they upend certain sort of tropes of the way Native people have been portrayed on TV. This is a show where I can never decide who my favorite character is. Initially, I thought it was Miko and Moe's, played by Little Mike and Funny Bone, the two little short dudes on the bikes that are always rapping and just kind of coming through as these little like roving court jesters. I love them. But I also love, I love White Steve who apparently has some freestyle skills, White Steve from the other gang. I love, Kenny Boy, the guy who runs the, scrap yard, who is just such the perfect, like white guy who thinks he's Native, who is constantly spouting just like, I don't know. Just he's one of those guys. We all know one of those guys who thinks he knows more about your culture than you do. I mean, but such a great character. But I think my absolute favorite character is the Spirit, played by Dallas Goldtooth. He is this sort of walking premonition or walking spirit that that kind of appears to Bear all the time when he's kind of conflicted. And the performances are so amazing because he's dressed like, you know, a Native American from a couple hundred years ago in like a loincloth and feathers. But he seems just like an average schlubby working dude. He spouts some wisdoms, but then like undercuts himself all the time. It's just, he's kind of, to me, the embodiment of what the show is. That sort of like, yeah, you want Native spirituality, here you go. There's some realness here, but it's also funny. It's also self-effacing. I really can't say enough good things about the show.
I would have to say my favorite character is somewhere in between Cheese, Willie Jack, and Brownie. I just
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is just so well written, and I really, I don't know, I just, there are so many things for me too that translate. You know, it's like they're like just, I think that there's part of it that's just like, you know, they are in Oklahoma, they are still in part of the South, so there are a lot of those things that translate as well. But it's just, yeah, what a wonderful show. Also, you know, we caught up on What If. I have not seen the most recent episode, but the episode with What If Killmonger saved Tony Stark was quite interesting. Again, being in my feels, was not prepared to hear Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa again, only because I know that he is only in four episodes, and this makes three, which means we're closer to the final time we'll get to hear him as T'Challa. But very similar to the way that he was in the Zombies episode, his dialogue, just knowing what he was going through, just really hits you a different way. But I thought that the story was really interesting, and the way it played out was, you know, not necessarily unexpected, but based on the characters that we know. And I think that's one thing I appreciate about these What Ifs, is the stories are believable because of the characters that we know, not necessarily that they're trying to shoot for something else, but that they all, for now anyway, stay within the realm of believability of what we already know about these characters.
Yeah. One of the characters that I love the most, honestly, from the Black Panther movie is Killmonger, because he is in that sort of Magneto school of villains, in that once you hear him out, you're like, okay, I think I might be on your side. And then they take it too far, you know, and tip over into villainhood. So I love his character. I love his bravado, the way he addresses the royal court of Wakanda, you know, the what's up auntie kind of vibe. Just Michael B. Jordan, you know, he's just one of my favorites overall. I can't get enough of him. It was an interesting story just narratively, because I couldn't quite tell where exactly it was going. If he was trying to betray Wakanda, conquer Wakanda, betray other people. It was interesting, but you're right. That scene with, you know, and of course, I think we should just say spoiler alert at the top of our show for anything we talk about. But, you know, in this episode, Killmonger kills T'Challa, and, you know, and then he appears when he is being made the new Black Panther. He appears in that spirit world where T'Challa appears to him. And just like immediately when I saw him, I was just like, oof, like it was hard to watch. Because in the zombie episode, he talked about, you know, people are never really gone because they're with you in your memories. And here he's literally an embodiment of somebody who's gone. It has like a sort of a deep resonance. Overall, as an episode, I still hasn't topped the zombie episode for me in this series. And it's also interesting, a lot of these episodes, the way they kind of just end, sort of almost mid-story or two-thirds of the way in, I have heard that they're going to try to tie everything sort of together towards the end of the series. So I'm curious to see how they do that. The next episode, which is dropping the day we're recording this, we haven't seen it yet, has a kind of a fun premise as well. It's What If Thor Was an Only Child? So could be interesting.
And, you know, Chris Hemsworth comes back to do the voice of Thor. So, you know, it's going to be a good time. Well, moving into games and hobbies, you know, I am, as an artist, for one, am a big believer of shameless self-promotion, because if you don't promote yourself and your art, who else is going to? Dan, you have a new podcast that has some, like, NPR legitimacy. I am like so happy and proud to at least, you know you, first of all. Second, like, this is a really big thing. And I really think that what you're doing on this podcast is really going to inspire a lot of people.
Yeah, thank you. I apparently can't do one podcast at a time. I had to start a new one. after the murderous rampage in Atlanta earlier this year, I think it kind of shook awoke a lot of Asian Americans in this country and kind of galvanized and activated us to do something. So we kind of came up with this project, we being Charlene Buckles from the ACLU in Louisville, Nima Kulkarni, who is the only Asian American state representative in Kentucky, and May Suramek, a business owner from Berea, who is currently the Democratic nominee in the special election to try to win Robert Goforth's vacated seat in the 89th district in Kentucky. The four of us kind of came together and just said, let's do a podcast and tell the stories of Asian Americans in Kentucky. And that's what we did. We created a podcast called Where Y'all Really From. And I think anybody who doesn't quote unquote look American can relate to that question because you have been asked that, you have been interrogated with that. I wanna brag a little bit and say that we went from conception to release of this podcast in just over 4 months. That we recorded 11 episodes in the middle of pandemic in 2 weeks. We are currently, the podcast can be found pretty much anywhere where you can get podcasts. But the most exciting thing that kind of blew me out of my socks was I went to npr.org and I typed in my own name and our podcast came up on the NPR site. So we are officially an NPR podcast. And that just, you know, knocked me out. So if you'll indulge us, we're going to play just a little, our trailer from our, we hope to be our first season of our podcast, Where Y'all Really From.
From Louisville Public Media.
What's the one universal question Asian American Pacific Islanders are asked at least once, but probably more like a million times?
Where are you from?
Where are you from? I'm from Louisville. No, where are you from? Louisville, Kentucky.
I'm from Williamsburg, Kentucky.
Kentucky. I grew up in Northern Kentucky.
Louisville is definitely home.
Bowling Green, Kentucky.
And then it's like, no, but where are you really from?
There's a million answers that run through your head every time it's asked.
And I don't really know like how to answer that question.
I'll just kind of pause, wait a awkward few seconds and say, why do you ask?
Well, I was born in Chicago, but I have a feeling that that's not what you mean.
I'm adopted, right? So my family is from Louisville, like not lying at all.
This is where I grew up, where I like graduated high school from.
Sometimes I just don't have the patience to explain where I'm from.
Right, exactly.
On our podcast, Where Are Y'all Really From?, we chat and share the diverse stories and perspectives of Asian and Pacific Islanders living, learning, and loving in Kentucky.
And every single one of us has a story.
I said, hi, what can I get y'all? And they just busted out laughing. They thought that was the funniest thing. Said, I did not expect that accent to come out of that face.
Living in Whitesburg, Kentucky, they saw, you know, this brown girl. It's like, we know she's not from here. How can we place her?
Louisville and Kentucky is still very much a black and white place. Even though your parents were white, you weren't white. But you're not black.
You're completely torn in a moment like that, where you want to put the camera down, but you understand that this is an important story.
The students would call all the men faculty doctor, and the women professors we'd be called Mrs.
We feel like a sense of belonging. Now we have like a country, a place to call home.
I'm Charlene Buckles, Louisville-based activist, fundraiser, and a proud Filipina Kentuckian.
And I'm Dan Wu, Chinese-American business owner and activist in Lexington. Join us for Where Y'all Really from the Louisville Public Media Podcast Incubator.
Learn more at whereyallreallyfrom.org.
That is just so awesome. I remember when you sent me the picture of the screenshot and I saw Where Y'all Really From and then Sam Sanders' face and I was like, man, I'm so geeked for you. I really am. Well, let's talk about food as I try to make a smooth transition from that. I think that in the times of this pandemic, you know, being a kind of person who sometimes, like, I like to cook, but sometimes I just don't have the energy for it, especially, you know, now. I'm always trying to find things that are just really simple and filling. And, you know, something that I didn't necessarily forget about, but I just did the other day, was I made some huevos rancheros. And just how simple it is with some scrambled eggs, with some good salsa. And I would say that my, not as, you know, my secret for it, I guess, is, you know, you can warm up the salsa, or you can just have it come fresh out of the refrigerator. I think if it's room temperature, that's where it's the best. But, you know, get you something that's somewhere between spicy and not going to melt your face, so that the eggs absorb everything. And it is, yeah, it's a good meal. Plus, one pandemic thing that I have kind of gotten into is making bread. We've talked about this before. So usually the bread that I make is good for 2 days. And then by day three, it's like really best if you toast it. That's been a thing that I've gotten really into.
Nice. We're recording this the day after the Mid-Autumn Festival, which is one of the biggest holidays in China. And one of the ways that are very, you know, you celebrate in the same way that we kind of eat turkey once a year here in America, we eat mooncakes. And mooncakes, if you don't know, here comes the explanatory comma, are these little round cakes that have really fun sort of decorative patterns on top of them, and they can be filled with all kinds of different sort of fruit paste fillings, or red bean, sesame, things like that. The Chinese generally are not known for their sweets and pastries. These things are dense. They're not super sweet. By the way, the best compliment a Chinese person can pay to your dessert is to say, "Oh, that's not too sweet," because that's how we roll. Yeah, so these things are dense. They're not too sweet. They have the little bit of a fruity vibe. You can't eat too many of them just because they are so dense. So, you know, I have some here that my mom bought me. I enjoy them in the sense of tradition, probably in the same way that nobody eats cranberry sauce the rest of the year. The thing that I want to talk to you about is... you know, you all can't see me. We're recording this over Zoom. DeBron's in the studio. I'm at home, and I'm surrounded by snacks. And my work these days is a lot of it is on computer, on Zoom meetings and stuff. So I'm always surrounded by snacks, mostly salty, mostly crunchy snacks. But I'm curious, DeBron, when you're at home working or recording, for example, or mixing, when you're kind of sitting stationary for a while, do you have particular go-to snacks that you're always kind of noshing on?
I mean, so I have like a couple of categories of that. So there's like the savory, which is usually like if it's not like, you know, nuts or chips or something, you know, sometimes it might just be like me just getting leftover whatever was made the night before and just kind of munching on that. But I also have a sweet tooth, and I love me some peach rings and like some dried mangoes. But dried mangoes are probably one of my favorite, just like kind of, especially when you're at the computer, because there's, you know, there's not a lot that, you know, I mean, yeah, sure, some of them you can get them with sugar coated, but for the most part, if you just kind of get them normal, there's not a lot you have to worry about to get on the computer or whatever it is you're working on. What about you?
Me, let's see, currently I have two different kinds of beef jerky. Let's see, I have Aloha Teriyaki. Sometimes I grimace at the branding of some of these flavors, but I always lean towards the Asian flavors when it comes to beef jerky, and then spicy garlic. I have one of my favorites, this Chinese brand of spicy peanuts. It's got dried chilies in it and also peppercorns, which gives you that nice buzzy sensation on your mouth. My kryptonite, as some of you know, is any interesting flavor of potato chip. Recently, I picked up a second Cuban sandwich chip from Aldi. They had and that was excellent. So yeah, anything savory, and then just a big old glass of ice water to wash it down.
So when you were talking about those peanuts, that reminded me of one of my other favorites, which is the wasabi peas. I can eat an entire thing of those in one sitting and not hate myself. I probably should, but yeah.
Well, right, it's a vegetable.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of healthy.
It used to be a vegetable.
Right. And I mean, hey, you know, you can always say, oh, well, you know, my sinuses were, you know, kind of bothering me. So I had to keep eating them.
It's medicinal.
Well, moving into pandemic advice, as always, our pandemic advice for this and every time is the pandemic advice for this week and the next coming weeks is very simple. Please get vaccinated. If you're not going to get vaccinated, wear a mask and stay 6 feet away from other people. Continue to wash your hands and be vigilant because this virus is still out there. This pandemic is still happening. It has begun to mutate. And the only way we're going to get through this is by taking care of those around us and ourselves. So again, please get vaccinated. And if you're not getting vaccinated, wear a mask and continue to stay 6 feet away from other people and wash your hands. And that kind of coming in after myself never gets weird, but doesn't get weird, I should say. But I do have one other piece of advice, and it's something that's been bothering me for a long time. And I feel that because I recently kind of have been more vocal about not wanting to play music in front of people because I just don't feel like it's comfortable. And I understand the need that people have after being cooped up for so long to just kind of go back to things. And there's been some misinformation about things, and that, you know, that's totally understandable. There's a lot kind of coming out all at once. And, you know, especially with the way that science works, it could be one thing today and then completely different tomorrow. But one thing that has really kind of bothered me is just this whole idea of just continuing to do things indoors without masks. At the Emmys, you know, Seth Rogen kind of made a point of saying, like, are we, like, just exempt to this? You know, there's a lot of people in, you know, not wearing masks. And he's like, I was told that this was going to be outdoors. But recently there was a very large concert at Rupp Arena, Lexington's own Walter Tunis kind of wrote a pretty scathing op-ed about the fact that he felt more comfortable at Railbird because it was outside and because they took COVID precautions than at this particular concert that, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, it was Eric Church. And there were no requests for vaccinations. There were in the article, there were pictures of some people in masks, but the majority of the crowd did not. And, like, I get it. I understand that everybody wants this to be over. Like I've said many times, I want to see my mom more than anything. I want to be able to actually, like, give her a hug. But can we stop pretending like this isn't a thing and stop having large events indoor without people wearing masks? It's not, like, I just think that part needs to take a chill for quite some time.
Yeah, it's sad how that this pandemic and vaccinations and masking and protocols have been so politicized, but it has ventured into our pop culture in a real way. Recently, comedian Jim Brewer said he wasn't going to perform at shows that required vaccination or masking. And I think the best response on the internet and from myself is also, who? Because good luck, Jim Brewer, selling tickets to begin with. And then good luck, you know, canceling shows at places where people are responsible. And that's about the nicest I can say about that situation.
Yeah, and when you have to be like, yeah, he was that guy that was in that movie with Dave Chappelle, and you're like, oh, okay.
That guy.
Yeah. Well, with that, it brings us to a close. This has been episode 30 of Advanced D&D, a podcast from WUKY, hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. We will see you here soon. Please take care of yourself and, you know, find something fun that is relaxing until we get to hang out again. And we'll see you soon.
I missed my shot.